following is a recording for Rafael Borja from iAdvise on Tuesday, February 16th, 2016, at 10 a.m. Central. Mansoor Special Call. Good morning. My name is Josh, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Mansoor Special Call. For opening remarks and introductions, I will turn the call over to Rafael Borja from iAdvise Corporate Communications. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you, Josh, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to Mansoor Extraordinary Conference Call. We have with us today Mansoor's senior management team, who will discuss the company's fourth quarter 2015 and consolidated results, which reflects material accounting adjustments, as per the press release distributed yesterday. If you have not yet received a copy, please contact iAdvise in New York at 212-406-3693, and we will immediately send you a copy. Also, the report is available on the company's website, www.mansoor.com, in the Investor Relations section. I would like to remind you that today's call is for investors and analysts only. Therefore, questions from the media will not be taken at this time. If you are a member of the media, please contact the company directly. Please be advised that forward-looking statements may be made during this conference call, and they are based on data that is currently available. I will now introduce our speakers. Joining us from Lima, Peru are Mr. Juan Luis Kruger, Chief Executive Officer, and Mr. Gianflavio Carozzi, Chief Financial Officer. At this time, Mr. Juan Luis Kruger will initiate his presentation. Mr. Kruger, please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone, and thank you again for joining us as we review the highlights at the operational level and the accounting adjustments included in our unconsolidated results for the fourth quarter and the full year 2015. As you may have noticed, this is really a special call. Normally, we would wait until the posting of our consolidated financials to have our quarterly call, which actually will take place early next month. However, as we just published yesterday afternoon our unconsolidated financial results, which do reflect material adjustments, we thought it was convenient in the spirit of having a very strong corporate governance to have this extraordinary conference call today and be able to explain a little bit more detail the nature of these adjustments. As I said, the main purpose of this call is to review these adjustments included in our unconsolidated financials, and which, of course, will be reflected in our consolidated financials later in the month as well. We will take some time to review very briefly the operating performance of our operations in Peru. However, as this call is based on Mansoor's unconsolidated fourth quarter results, we will have a limited scope for discussion. We will not provide guidance today. Guidance will be provided and addressed on our revision of our consolidated financial results early next month. Of course, afterwards, we can open the floor for Q&A. Going into a brief review of just a side note here as well is the fact that the unconsolidated results reflect basically the results of our Peruvian mining operations. That's our San Rafael mine and our Pisco smelter, as well as our Pucamarca gold mine. Although the results of our other subsidiaries are also included, but only on the fair share that we have over those results on the one single line, which are the results of our subsidiaries. Going into our results for the year, 2015 was a year in which we really were able to meet and surpass all the operating goals that we had set for the year, and as you may have noticed, obviously exceed the guidance that we provided early in the year. So it was a year of very strong delivery, and with very important goals being accomplished. Number one, in terms of safety, we managed to close the year with only one lost time injury in all of our Peruvian operations. This is really remarkable, especially in the case of San Rafael, where we went down from 5 LTIs or lost time incidents to 5, to 1 only. Pucamarca recorded its third year without having any accidents, which really makes it one of the safest mines, not only in Peru, but I think also in the world. In terms of production results, we managed to reach production at San Rafael of 20,224 tons of refined tin. That's within the guidance provided for the year. And we exceeded the production guidance at Pucamarca with record gold production of 120,910 ounces for the year. That's almost 21% above the lower end of the guidance that we have provided at the beginning of the year. In terms of cost, cash cost per ton treated at San Rafael closed average for the year at $127. That's 2% below the lower end guidance that we provided early in the year, and 11% below that of 2014. If we remember, back in 2013, we were at above $150, so I think we're really showing a very significant improvement. Cash cost per ton treated at Pucamarca closed at $4.2 per ton treated. That's as well within the lower end of our guidance range, and 31% below 2014. Very clear how sensitive this asset is to volume, and that we were able to record historic high production of gold, the cost really went down. In terms of cost per ounce of gold produced, we closed the year at $280 per ounce, probably consolidating the position of Pucamarca as one of the world's lowest cost gold producers. All these important achievements in terms of cash cost were the result of appropriate management measures taken to mitigate commodity and market conditions, namely the tin price, which on average went down 25% in the year. Similarly, all other lines of expenses, as well as exploration and capital expenditures, were reduced without compromising our growth strategy. This is extremely important because all the financial results that you have available as of yesterday afternoon include around $50 million, $48 million to be more precise, that we invested in 2015 both in exploration and our growth projects. So in other words, what we were able to achieve in 2015 was the capacity to preserve our cash position while at the same time keep investing in the future of the company. Our strategy when the prices started coming down was focused basically in making sure that we preserve the value of our portfolio by protecting our EBITDA margins and preserving the cash position while we were able to drive the growth program I mentioned before. And as a result of this, we have recorded an EBITDA for 2015 at our Peruvian operations of $207 million, which implies a 43% EBITDA margin. As I mentioned before, the objective was to preserve EBITDA margins and to preserve cash despite a 25% drop in prices, and this is what we were able to achieve through the extreme focus that we placed during the year and the previous years as well on increasing productivity, reducing costs, and managing with a lot of prudence our financial statements and our financial position. However, regardless of all these very significant operational achievements, the financial performance, bottom line, at the end of the day, was impacted by the low price environment, and also by the impact of the impairment test that we conducted on our Marcobre project, which forced us to recognize a significant accounting charge in the last quarter. And actually is the main reason why we're having this call. Every year, as you know, we conduct an impairment test for all our assets. After a thorough evaluation, this year we concluded that all our operating units passed this test, and this means that they reflect or they have a greater expected economic value than its corresponding book value, despite the depressed commodity price context in which we're operating today. Nonetheless, the impairment test performed on the Mina Justa project of which, as you may recall, Minsur acquired a 70% stake in 2012, concluded that an adjustment, and this is a material adjustment, for impairment of assets had to be recorded. Marcobre, which is the company that owns, Marcobre, which is a subsidiary of Minsur and is the company that owns the Mina Justa project, had a book value on a 100% basis of Mina Justa of $840 million as of the end of 2015. The fair value calculated as of today in the current industry context at a pre-feasibility stage of the project, which is, by the way, in process of being optimized, reached $200 million when we conducted the impairment test with our external auditor, EY. Therefore, we decided to promptly recognize an impairment asset charge of $641 million on Minsur's financial statement. Obviously, this amount has been accounted in the income statement under the line called Results from Subsidiaries and Associates. However, in Minsur's unconsolidated financials, it is reflected in accordance to Minsur's 70% stake in the project. So this amounts to a charge of $486 million. Minsur's consolidated income statement, however, will reflect a complete adjustment of $641 million. Given these adjustments, we have been forced to record a net loss of $536 million at the unconsolidated financial results that were published yesterday. However, and this is very important, if we exclude the results from subsidiaries, Minsur's unconsolidated net profit would have reached $62 million in 2015. The bottom line, what we wanted to convey to you guys is a few key messages. The first one is the company has a very strong operational results in 2015 despite the low prices. Given the work that we have been doing in the last 3 years to increase productivity, reduce our unit costs, and focus our efforts in exploration and growth projects as a source of value in the future, we have been able to achieve these results in a context where especially tin prices have been very depressed, particularly in the second half of last year, reaching levels that were probably the lowest in the last decade. We have a very strong balance sheet with a very strong cash position at the closing of 2015, very similar to the one that we had when we closed 2014. And that basically shows the capacity of our operating assets to generate cash flow in a very stringent price environment, in a very acid price environment, and financing our growth projects, both in the exploration side, but also in the new project that we're funding. And the third one is that I think that we are showing a very clear sign of good corporate governance by adjusting the value of our Mina Justa project as the prices come down in the market, and especially as we have already now the first date of the pre-feasibility study finalized at the end of 2015. The question that could be posed is, why was this adjustment not done before? And the answer is very straightforward. At the end of 2015, we finished the first gate of the pre-feasibility study of the project with a revised geological model, a revised mine plan, and a full review of all the project design, layout, and early engineering. This allowed us to review and revisit the financial model and be able to come with a financial valuation based on the new layout and the new approach to develop the project. Beforehand, we were working on the PFS, which started in mid-2014 and ran all the way through to the end of 2015. Right now, we are working on the second phase of the pre-feasibility study, which should be finished in May this year, which aims to optimize the project and try to further improve both the CapEx, reduce the OpEx, and improve the way we are planning on developing the project so that we can generate further value. But today, in the current size context and with the current best information that we have on the project, what we have is our valuation estimated at $200 million, and that's what we are basically adjusting the book value of this asset for. I think those are the key highlights of what we wanted to discuss with you this morning. I really thank you for your attention, and we open up the floor to the Q&A session. Operator, please proceed to the Q&A.
Thank you. At this time, we'll open the floor for your questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key, followed by the one key, on your touchtone phones now. Questions will be taken in the order in which they are received. If at any time you'd like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, just press star 2. Again, to ask a question, please press star 1 now. And we have our first question coming from Roy Yagulik from Bank of America.
Thank you. I guess I'm a bit confused. Can you explain the differences in reported numbers? For instance, you report substantially different numbers for what debt was as of December 2014 in this year's press release compared to what you reported in last year's press release. I think the difference is almost $100 million lower. If I look at cash, you have a different number. If I track the last four quarters of EBITDA results as reported, I get to a number that's less than full-year reported EBITDA. So that all would be great to clarify. And then in addition, you know, you continue to hold a lot of cash, and I think there's still a question as to at what pace this cash will be used for different projects.
Sure, Roy. This is Jaslavio. So just to answer your questions, in terms of net cash is very similar to what we have reported before. Now, bear in mind that this is the unconsolidated. However, it encompasses most of the cash holdings at Minsur. So with that, we are showing an unconsolidated cash balance of about $576 million mm-hmm. versus $586 the prior year. Debt-wise, hasn't changed much. We're showing $450 million end of 2015 versus $443 of last year.
Yeah, when I look at what your report today, you reported that in December 2014 you had $443.7 million of debt. But a year ago, you told me that the debt as of the end of December 2014 was $528 million, okay? And now you're telling me the debt as of that point in time is $443 million. Yeah.
Let me explain you the difference. This has to do with the difference between our unconsolidated mm-hmm. Financials and our mm-hmm. consolidated financials. Mm-hmm. Normally, we would not have a call on the unconsolidated figures, so mm-hmm. we would always be talking on the consolidated financials only. Now, mm-hmm. the main difference between those two is basically that on our unconsolidated figures, each line of our P&L and balance sheet refers only to our Peruvian operations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that is San Rafael, Cucamarca, and Pisco.
So we're not talking about Tinga. So what's missing is Brazil, basically.
Exactly.
And Chile.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right, Roy. I really want to apologize if we have created any confusion. What we really wanted was to address upfront, and the minute we announced yesterday this impairment adjustment,
mm-hmm.
The reason why we are doing this adjustment and the impact on the results. And the problem is that in Peru, we are forced by the equivalent of the SEC
sure.
to file what is called individual financial statements, which are unconsolidated financial statements. And then, a few weeks later, the consolidated financial statements. Everywhere in the world, and this is the bottom line, what is really important are the consolidated financial statements.
Right, yeah. So for my debt purposes, I should wait until you tell you
come out. Exactly.
Yeah.
For your comparison purposes, you should wait until later this month, and we will have early next month a call on the consolidated basis. The purpose of the call was mainly to explain to you guys straight, you know, we have done this adjustment, which obviously we have picked up on the individual or unconsolidated financial statements reported yesterday because of Peruvian legal regulations. But on the consolidated basis, which are the comparable figures, you will be able to compare them once we publish them in a few weeks later from today.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. Just my final question is, can you say anything about the pace of how we might expect to see cash used for the Patinga, the Bofidel 2 project, and any other projects over the next 2 years?
Yeah. Right now, we've made a... Well, actually, last May, when the tin price started to drop very significantly, we made a decision to review our strategy in Patinga. And instead of going for what we called before a big bang expansion of Patinga, which would have required a significant capital investment, in the current price scenario, we decided to be a little bit more prudent and more conservative. And we went through a strategy that we call now sweating the assets, which means that instead of really investing a significant capex in Patinga to expand mainly our team's production capacity, what we are doing now is doing a much smaller, I would say a marginal capital investment. We're talking about between $12 and $15 million to expand on a staged approach as well our niobium and tantalum production capacity. The reason why is because there is a very significant upside potential for this asset to produce more niobium and tantalum. As you know, niobium is really a very interesting market, with niobium price being very stable in the last 12 years, pretty much zero volatility, very low volatility, and Patinga has a big resource of niobium. In the case of tantalum, Patinga is the largest tantalum deposit in the world, and tantalum is a niche industry with a very high volatility, but it's mainly supply-driven because there are no sustainable sources of tantalum in the world. Most of the tantalum comes from the DRC and Africa and is managed and built by very informal miners with quite a few traders in the middle. So the industry that uses tantalum has been really concerned about the sustainability of the tantalum supply in the long term. And therefore, as Patinga can become a very sustainable source of tantalum in the long term, we believe there's a very interesting opportunity. So what we're doing is we're maximizing recoveries in tin, but at the same time, we're going to start expanding in phases and in stages our capacity to produce more niobium and tantalum. We have also completed an R&D program in 2015, which has allowed us to develop two new products and separate the niobium from the tantalum, so that now we can address the ferro-niobium market and the ferro-tantalum market. Up to 2015, we were basically selling both elements, both metals together in one alloy, and that limited our capacity to access bigger markets. The largest market is the ferro-niobium market, and now with the new product development that we have done, which is right now being tested, and we have already started making shipments of this product to some of our clients, we should be able to expand our market depth in terms of these products. So in terms of Patinga, what we're expecting is we're not expecting really a significant capital investment going forward, other than the normal sustaining capital, which in this operation could range between $20 to $25 million per year. That's the strategy in Patinga, which we have called sweat the asset, instead of going for the big bang that we were planning before, until we are more confident on the price context. Having said that, most of our cash is going to be then going to mainly our B2 project. B2 keeps moving forward. We just finished in January the last phase of our industrial pilot scale plant test work, achieving very important improvements against the previous phase of test work. And the pre-feasibility study should be completed in May this year, and then we will jump directly into the feasibility and probably fast-track the detailed engineering. We have completed the acquisition of the land that we required to build a new tailings dam for the project. That was at the end of last year as well. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we're very well positioned to basically push the project forward in the next 2.5 years. We expect probably to start production at the end of 2018, as we have reported before. That CapEx today is in the ballpark of somewhere between 160 to 180 or 200 maybe. We're fine-tuning the number. And then the remaining of the cash will, of course, go to fund our Mina Justa project that makes no mistake. I mean, we have basically taken a significant impairment charge. However, that doesn't mean that the project is not attractive enough for us. It is attractive enough for us going on a going forward basis. It has a positive NPV and a positive value, which, by the way, we believe can still be further optimized as we progress through the next stages of the project. The third potential use could be if we find interesting opportunities in today's bear market, basically to take some positions in some assets that are generating cash flow. We're not talking about greenfield projects, but assets that generate cash flow and that basically are what we call world-class assets, assets that are very low-cost producers, have a significant resource advantage, and that really are cash flow positive from day one. Obviously, in the current market, we're looking very actively on some opportunities, and as we, you know, if we find anything, we'll be reporting to the market accordingly. But those are the sources for our current cash. And as I mentioned before, Roy, the main objective in the bear market for us is to make sure that we preserve our margins and that we preserve our strong balance sheet and our strong cash position.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Dias Aleluia from AB Global.
Hello, Gianflavio. How are you? I have three questions. The first one is you mentioned the NPV for the copper project is positive. Is that true with a $2 copper price? Some analysts in the market, even in 2018, 19, still have a very subdued forecast for copper prices. So this is a large investment, and it's concerning given it's not a first year cash cost project. And then the second question is, can you explain the increasing tin prices we've seen recently? What's the driver behind that, and what is your outlook for the year, on average for the year, the fundamentals behind it? And also, is your cash, is any of your cash restricted, and what percent is in dollars? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Thais. So I'll address your project valuation question and the cash, your cash question, and then Juan Luis will talk a little bit about the market. In terms of our Marcobre project, here is something that's very important to mention is that remember that right now we are in the study phase. Now what this means is that we are putting resources, limited resources, let's say, at risk, in trying to increase the value of the project. No decision to invest will be made until the end of the feasibility study. Right now, we're aiming at finishing our pre-feasibility study in May. Then we'll have one more year of feasibility study, which we aim at not only finalizing it, but also including a higher proportion or higher percentage of detailed engineering before having to make a decision. Now, having said that, today our valuation has been adjusted for lower prices. We are not running that valuation at today's spot price. However, we'll have to see what prices are once we have to make that decision, but that's still at least a year and a half or more from now. Just further on that, Thais, sorry, hi Thais, how are you? Just further on that, what we are doing is we're running the project not at $2 per pound, mainly because that's not what we believe will be the long-term copper price. But what we have taken is a big hit in price compared to the consensus forecast. And the important thing here is that we believe, and we have already found some opportunities of improvement for the project that could further give us another $150 to $200 million in NPV. Okay, that's mainly optimizing the port infrastructure so that we can download the acid, the sulfuric acid, right next to the mine. Today, the financials include downloading the acid in the main port in Peru, which is 500 kilometers away from the mine. That has a significant and the most significant impact in cost and can create a very significant amount of value together with other sources of value that have been identified. So going to your question, is the project viable at $2 per pound? We believe at $2 per pound, with all the additional improvements that are right now being developed, the project will keep the $200 million value. So depending on where the price is, the project could go from $200 to $400 range, and that's basically what we're managing right now in our internal figures. With respect to tin price, we're seeing a good rally, and we believe it's, as we have always mentioned, the tin industry is a supply-constrained industry. And I think that with a very small drop in production or production cap announced by the top eight Chinese producers in China, what we have seen is that the market is already understanding that it's going to be short this year of supply. The latest report from ITRI that was out, I think last week or week before last week, is showing us that there's a supply and demand deficit forecasted not only for this year but for the coming years. What has happened is that the industry cost curve has proven to be valid or to be working in a way, and Indonesia has cut production in the last 2.5 or 3 years significantly because of the high cost nature of their informal mining operations. And now the Chinese, actually the highest cost producing Chinese companies, have also been forced to cut back their production. They announced a 17,000 ton cutback a couple weeks ago, and the price immediately started to react. I think it's driven by fundamentals, and if there's a little bit of more confidence and a little bit of a better sentiment in the market for commodities as a whole, it should have a further benefit of the general market sentiment, because I think this reaction of the price is really despite still a quite, I would say, bear market and very volatile market for commodities. But again, we're going back to the structural dynamics of the industry, supply-constrained industry, undercapitalized industry, and there's not much tin around. Demand will continue to grow, between 1.5 to 2.5, perhaps 3% per year. There are new uses that are being developed in the last couple of years. 20,000 tons, which is a little bit above 7% of the total world's production of tin, is going to the lead-ion battery industry. So I think that all in all, from a demand perspective, quite stable. From a supply perspective, there are shortages, and the highest cost producers are really cutting back production to adjust to this price context. Obviously, the benefit of having a world-class asset and operating the lowest cost mine allows us to still deliver very, very strong profit margins and cash flow despite the current environment. Then, Thais, in terms of cash, all of our cash is invested almost entirely in U.S. dollars. It is all in liquid assets, some more liquid than others. I would say probably only around $60 million of that cash is invested in term deposits that go a little bit beyond 1 year. But the rest is all invested in very liquid assets.
And nothing is restricted then. Okay, great. Great. And I just want to express that this comfortable cash balance and the first class asset position that you have really has been supporting your bonds and making your and keeping your creditors comfortable. And it's a bit concerning that to make a big investment that you, if you decide in the future to make a big investment in a project that's not first class asset, given all the uncertainties in the market today, we just want to make sure that you really still keep a strong balance sheet going forward. Thank you very much.
Let me make a further comment there, Thais, because I think you're really nailing a key issue. The way we develop our projects, we have a very, very systematic approach to capital allocation. And what we follow is what we call a staged gate approach. And we follow decision gates, which actually aim to de-risk our projects, and which actually allow us to make sure that we only make capital investment decisions when they're value accretive and when they have the appropriate return for the risk that the project has. So what we are saying in the case of Marcobre, which is obviously a very significant investment, is that we will be finishing the second phase of the pre-feasibility study in May 2016. That's in a few months from now. Then we're going to pass a formal decision gate where the board is going to decide whether we go on and we continue to the feasibility study level or we just put the project in hold because of the level of returns and risks that we see. If we pass to the next gate, which is the feasibility stage gate, then we will make, and going from pre-feasibility to feasibility is really a small commitment. It should be around another $25 million that we will have to invest. That's all the way up to May 2017. In May 2017, we will be facing a very important date because there is where we will decide whether we go and execute or construct the project or not. And of course, if we don't have the right level of returns, if we have not been able to deliver a pound of copper in the first quartile of the industry cost, and if we are not able to get at least the level of returns that we want for the risk of the project, then the project will not be developed. We don't have a gun in our heads to develop the project. We are committed to developing it. We're committed to keep investing in it, but we will go stage by stage, gate by gate, provided that it makes sense and that it's value-creating for our shareholders.
Oh, thank you. That's very good to hear. Thanks so much. And also, I did get a little confused as well, but clarified before the call that you were holding a special call this time, just like Roy mentioned, but always clarified. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Hector Collantes from Credit Corp Capital.
Hi guys, thank you very much. Most of my questions were answered. I just wanted to ask you two more things. One is related on the last thing you were actually saying. What are the investment rules that you might have now? For instance, it's very, very interesting for us to hear that you are aiming for a first quartile operation in cost. Perhaps you can share your ideas on some acceptable hurdle rates for projects at this price level of the copper price. Perhaps you can give us just a broad idea of what were you seeing and what are those main red flags you are seeing on a project and what prompted you to make these decisions on Mina Justa. And my other question is related to the ore sorting initiative. I just wanted to hear more on how is it going and what are the next steps in that front. Thank you.
Hector, I'm not sure if I got your question correctly because we had some trouble with the audio here. But If we don't answer it, please feel free to question it again.
Yep.
In terms of the project, obviously the project today is still delivering a positive NPV of around $200 million. And that means that we're getting value on top and above our hurdle rate. Okay? So, I don't know if that was your question. The second question regarding ore sorting, basically the project is well advanced. The equipment arrived to the mine a week and a half ago. All the earthworks have been concluded, and we're moving into basically installing all the equipment and doing all the electromechanical work in the next 2 months. We expect that by the end of April, we should be commissioning the project on schedule and on budget, and working into a full ramp-up of production all the way into the second semester of the year. So that's the status on the ore sorting project.
Thank you very much, Stu. Very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, if anyone would like to ask a question, please press *1 now. Again, that is *1 if you would like to ask a question. At this time, we have no further questions. I'd like to turn the call back over to Mr. Kruger for closing remarks.
Yes, thank you very much for your continued interest in the company. Thank you for participating in this exceptional or extraordinary call, which at the end of the day, as we mentioned, is just aimed to explain you the nature of this impairment adjustment that we have done on the value of Mina Justa, but that obviously doesn't have any type of implication on the financial strength of the company, neither on our commitment to keep investing in our projects and keep improving the productivity and reducing our costs of our current operations. So we believe that 2015 has been a very strong year despite the lower prices, and we look forward to sharing you in more detail our performance for the past year on a consolidated basis early in March. Again, we apologize if there was any confusion around the numbers and the call, but we thought it was appropriate to hold this conference call and to basically give you a little bit of more color on the nature of the adjustment that Hawass reported yesterday. Thank you very much, and look forward to talking to you in a few weeks' time.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect.